I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story.
We also know that our hospital system will be under the greatest stress in October. However, we also know that living with COVID means you have a cautious and staged reopening once you get to those high rates of vaccination in your adult population.
After 3 months in lockdown, New South Wales is just weeks away from hitting its adult double-dose vaccination target of 70%.
Now, we have obviously consulted the national plan. We've also had input from our health experts and stakeholders to make sure that when we start reopening at 70% double dose, that it's done in a safe way and it's only for people who are vaccinated.
Last week, the New South Wales Premier announced that shortly after the state reaches this target, public health restrictions will ease for those who are vaccinated. With the infectious Delta variant continuing to spread, this could be the first time an Australian state will relax restrictions while COVID cases continue to rise. So, will this gamble to open up the economy pay off? And what could this mean for other states and territories? Today, New South Wales experiments with reopening during an outbreak. It's Wednesday, the 15th of September. So, Anne, you have been to many press conferences with the New South Wales government over the past few months. Can you step me through how the New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian and others in the government have been speaking about opening up during this time?
Well, fairly early on, she started talking about giving people back their freedoms.
Anne Davies is a reporter at Guardian Australia.
So the 6 million jabs gives us opportunities to consider what restrictions we can ease. It gives us opportunities to think about what life in September looks like. And can I please urge everybody?
Then last Thursday, she came out with the big one.
We will get to 70% double dose when people get their second dose, when people come forward to get vaccinated. And these freedoms will come into place the Monday after that occurs.
As soon as we reach 70% double vaccination for eligible adults, we'll have significant freedoms, which include being able to go to the pub, go to hairdressers, all the things that we've all drastically missed.
Right. Everyone has been dubbing this as a kind of roadmap to freedom for New South Wales. Can you run us through exactly what that looks like?
So it's important to note that this roadmap applies to Greater Sydney and parts of regional New South Wales, which are still under lockdown. There are parts of New South Wales, like the North Coast and the Riverina, which came out of lockdown last weekend because they've had no cases in the last 14 days. But for those of us who are still under lockdown, your freedom really does depend on your vaccination status. All adults in the state who are fully vaccinated will be allowed to gather at each other's homes in groups of five, outdoors in groups of 20, visit pubs, clubs, cafes, and also travel to regional New South Wales. We're also going to open up the big stadiums again, but with much reduced crowds and social distancing of 4 square metres. So if you're not vaccinated, you're pretty much under the old rules, which is you're not meant to leave your LGA, you're not meant to go to people's houses. It really does divide the citizenry into two classes of people. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out.
For me, when I heard these announcements, they were over and above what I expected, some of these measures. Did any of them surprise you, Anne?
Well, I was a bit surprised that they've decided to allow people to meet in their homes. That seems to me the most risky part of the plan. Everything else has safeguards built in. You'll have to check in with QR codes at pubs and at stadiums, and there'll be people there to make sure you maintain social distancing. And there's a couple of other things that are a bit surprising too, which is you're going to be able to travel to the regions. I thought they might still keep the city a bit zoned away from the rest of the country. Now,
will lockdowns definitely be over at this 70% rate, Anne?
Well, that's the other thing, that there can be snap lockdowns. If a caseload gets too high in an LGA, they will then say, well, sorry, that LGA is back to having a geographic fence around it. Can't go out of your LGA.
Do we know what number that too high caseload might be?
No, we don't really. We don't have a sort of 50 cases per 100,000 people or any measure like that. So we don't really know. The other thing is, she's saying that the freedoms will still apply within your LGA. It's just you can't leave it. So if you're declared a hotspot, it might be that you can still go to the pub if you're fully vaccinated. You just have to go to a pub in, say, Canterbury, Bankstown, if that's where you live.
Okay. So it's maybe not as dire a picture of those snap lockdowns as some people might think.
Well, I think it's a wait and see thing. Certainly when we talked to John Barilaro, the Deputy Premier, who was one of the driving forces behind this roadmap, he sort of hinted that if there was an activity that was clearly giving rise to spread, they would cut it out. So it's possible that as well as geographic lockdowns, we could have, say, can't go to the stadium if that's where there's a problem.
Mm. So, Anne, this announcement has been made when daily cases are still over 1,000 in New South Wales, and the state actually hit a record high for daily case numbers for any state just a few days ago. I think some people are fairly bewildered at the idea that a lockdown could end without necessarily getting COVID-19 case numbers under control. That would be a first for the nation, really. What was the Premier's rationale for opening up in this way?
Well, I think it goes like this. Having failed to rein in the case numbers, which was their objective at the start, they've put their faith in modelling from the Burnet Institute, that employs epidemiologists. And so what they've said is that, in theory, by mid-September, the high vaccination rates will start to kick in, particularly in the hotspot LGAs, and they still account for about 80% of the daily new cases. So the idea is that if you get the vaccination rates up to 70% or even 80% in these areas, the cases will start to turn down. But as at the time of recording this, we've seen perhaps a flattening of the curve of infections, but we certainly haven't seen numbers starting to fall in any meaningful way. So that's the odd thing about what they're doing. You know, we're counting on there being a turnaround in the next week or so of numbers, particularly in those hotspot LGAs, and we haven't seen that yet. And what's really important to keep in mind is that the Burnet Institute's prediction that the cases would go down was also based on the assumption that the lockdown restrictions that we're currently in, that's the fairly strict ones, would stay the same and that compliance would remain high. But of course, the lockdown's now about to end to some extent in New South Wales, and we will have greater freedoms. People will be interacting more, and we're also not sure what compliance is going to be like. So the New South Wales government is moving into a really grey area, and we can't rely on meeting those numbers in the Burnet Institute modelling if we're going down an entirely different path.
Right, so New South Wales is rocketing into a fairly uncertain future. What could be the impact of all of these changes on the hospitalisations and deaths due to COVID-19 in the state?
So the Burnet modelling is based on an assumption the hospitalisation capacity would peak in October, would stress the hospitals, but would still be manageable. And then it would start to come down. But the important thing about this is to remember this is based on the lockdown restrictions staying the same as they are now. Now, we've just had new modelling come out this week from AusSage, which looks at the impact of relaxing at 70% and 80%, and it predicts a big surge in hospitalisations right around Christmas, because of the more relaxed rules, because what's going to mean is that people will interact more and there will be more opportunities for the virus to spread.
I mean, that sounds incredibly concerning that we could see you know, a peak that's even worse a few months after the peak that's coming in the next month. How much can we rely on all of this different modelling, though?
Look, modelling is only useful if the inputs stay the same, and we are changing the rules in New South Wales. So we enter into uncharted territory, and we can expect that hospitalisations will increase the more people interact and spread the disease.
Right. So considering the projected impact on an already stressed hospital system, how are health experts responding to this roadmap?
Well, a number of public health experts have said they're quite concerned about how safe it is to open up now. For instance, Stephen Duckett, health economist at the Grattan Institute, has said one person's freedom is another person's going to the hospital. Professor Mark Stoove, the head of public health at the Burnett Institute, told the ABC that his general advice was to be extremely cautious in lifting restrictions at 70%. And, of course, the AMA, the Australian Medical Association, has called on the New South Wales government to provide more details with the roadmap, including modelling of future cases and the impact on the health system with the roadmap implemented. Because, of course, the modelling we've seen is based on the restrictions staying in place, and there's no doubt that the government will have done some modelling about what happens when you relax.
There were reports last week that the Premier ignored Chief Health Officer Kerry Chant's advice to reopen in this way. What do you make of that?
Well,
Premier, can I just have a clarification?
Dr. Chant, you're comfortable with the pubs and gyms opening at a 70%
rate? The Chief Health Officer, Kerry Chant, has been asked on a number of occasions what her advice was, and she's really refused to say, but she keeps referring to the importance of getting to 80% vaccination rates and talks about, I'd really like to see the state at 85, 90% even.
You're comfortable with that?
Look, as I said, I think the roadmap gives certainty to businesses about what it looks like. I think the Premier's been very clear that this is all contingent on us getting case numbers down and getting control, and that we can have the opportunity to actually do things locally that may respond to outbreaks.
She's described the plan as cautious, but she hasn't exactly leapt to its defence. So I think it's probably true that she wanted to see 80%, although she's really not confirmed that. But having decided on 70%, I think they have agreed that she will have greater say in whether they have to backtrack. And it's really going to be a matter of how many deaths the society is prepared to tolerate and whether our hospitals can cope. But the risk, of course, which we've seen overseas, is that the most vulnerable get sick, whether it be Indigenous people or poor people or people with mental health issues who've just fallen through the cracks. And I think you can see from what Kerry Chant says every press conference, she's very, very concerned that COVID-19 around the world has hit vulnerable populations much harder than, you know, the middle class.
Does this constitute a divide, as some people have reported it, between the Premier and the Chief Health Officer? Or is this kind of just what's to be expected in a well-functioning government that's trying to take in a lot of different advice?
Well, you know, ultimately it's a decision for government, and health officers can be expected to put a more conservative, health-oriented advice to the government. And obviously there's all other people sitting around in crisis cabinet, like John Barilaro, who is a big voice for the regions, who are doing it really tough, and also the Treasurer, Dominic Perrottet, who's extremely worried about the economy. And, you know, as they keep saying, well, there's more to people's lives than just their physical health. There's their mental health, their economic health. And so they've said it's time, you know, basically. And, of course, there's a lot of powerful lobby groups in the background as well, like the pubs and clubs, who have the ear of a number of the economic ministers, and they desperately want to be open again.
Mm. This issue, the way that the New South Wales government treats health advice, has come under scrutiny before.
Would you be able to provide on notice to the committee the escalating issues that were raised prior to the lockdown on the 25th?
At a parliamentary inquiry last month, questions were raised about when the Chief Health Officer advised the government to go into lockdown.
I'll answer that because obviously those issues go to Crisis Cabinet, which is a subcommittee of the Cabinet. But Dr Chan is under oath and she's given you the evidence, which is quite clear, so she won't be providing any documents.
And some commentators have suggested that the New South Wales government is getting the balance wrong, putting the economy and business interests ahead of health advice. Do you think that's fair to say, based off the decisions that they've made so far this year?
I think Gladys Berejiklian is very motivated by being seen as the Premier who puts business first. And she also talks about freedom. She likes to distinguish herself from the approach that Dan Andrews has taken, even though they may ultimately end up going down more or less the same route. But I think that's her natural inclination. And I think there's a lot of people in New South Wales in the government who would like to see the state opened up. You know, if there's a mistake in hindsight, it's that New South Wales didn't lock down harder earlier, but that was because she was always juggling these competing pressures in Cabinet.
You mentioned that we might have to backtrack on some key parts of this plan, but is it possible that this experiment that New South Wales is embarking on will just fail altogether, that it won't work?
Well, I guess you would judge failure by the hospital system being completely unable to cope. And in that case, there will be renewed lockdowns. Now, whether that's across geographic areas or whether it's done by restricting particular activities like going to stadiums or going to pubs, that's a distinct possibility.
I mean, I imagine ending the state lockdown only to have to go back into statewide lockdown a couple of months later would be a very surreal and horrifying prospect.
Yeah, well, talking to our colleagues in Victoria, you just feel their pain about this in and out of lockdown. So I don't think anyone could rule it out.
Next, how opening up with new freedoms for vaccinated people will change Australia over the next year. So, Anne, this roadmap to freedom is kind of the first time we as a nation have seen a system where there are freedoms for some vaccinated people across the state, right? This feels fairly historic, and I'm wondering what this could look like in practice. What about people who can't get vaccinated or people who just haven't had access to the vaccine yet? Where do they fit into this plan?
Well, that's a good question, Laura. There's been almost no discussion about how people will show that they have medical reasons for not getting vaccinated. Another issue is the Indigenous communities, which, of course, have been really failed by this rollout, as we saw in Wilcannia. So it's a question about getting access and ensuring that we actually do have teams that are going out to these communities and reaching them in a way they feel comfortable with, like through the Aboriginal health services. There's other pockets and communities that we know have big barriers to access as well, like people who sleep rough and people suffering from severe mental health issues.
So for these people, whether by choice or not, who aren't vaccinated fully come October, what do their lives look like?
Well, I think it's going to be pretty miserable for people who are unvaccinated. For a start, they're at real risk of getting very ill still. And what we've seen with the virus almost seeks out people who are unvaccinated or who have vulnerabilities, and it gets into those communities and spreads very rapidly. So there's that. But also, it'll be really difficult for them. They can go to supermarkets and they can go for a walk, but that's about all they will be able to do. It's going to be very difficult for them.
Mm. other states and territories will be watching what happens with New South Wales' roadmap to freedom very closely, I imagine, but particularly Victoria, which has been hardest hit by repeated lockdowns and is still going through an outbreak right now. What are some of the things these states will be looking out for to show that New South Wales' plan is good and works and is something that should be followed?
Well, the immediate pressure is going to be for Victoria because they, despite having very tough lockdowns, they've been unable to suppress the numbers. So I think they'll be looking to see what happens with our hospitalisation numbers. So it'll be about a month after we relax the restrictions because it takes a couple of weeks for people to circulate, the disease to get around in the community, then another couple of weeks for people to get sick. So it could be sort of mid to late November before we start seeing what's happening with the New South Wales experiment. I think they'll be looking to see how whether New South Wales has to backtrack or whether it goes forward, whether there are significant compliance issues, particularly on people meeting in households, which I think is probably the most risky part of the plan, but we'll see.
Will New South Wales' decision put more political pressure on Victoria to reopen early? We know that this is what Scott Morrison wants, for example, but I can't imagine Dan Andrews being thrilled about following the New South Wales blueprint.
Well, the problem they will have is the same as the problem New South Wales has, that after you've had shops and restaurants closed for nearly 3 months, as is the case in New South Wales, people run out of capital. The government's given them grants, but they really are grants that will last for a couple of months. And so the pressure comes on, people start laying off staff. In the regions, businesses which haven't had the same sort of economic support are sort of going, well, it's coming up to the Christmas holidays. We want to be able to open up for guests. So I think Victoria is going to come under increased pressure to open.
I did not sign up, and no Victorian signed up, to a national plan to vaccinate Sydney.
And that, of course, is why Premier Dan Andrews is so upset about the fact that vaccines have allegedly being diverted to New South Wales, particularly Pfizer vaccines, that New South Wales got more than its fair share.
And whilst I've been very clear, the extra allocations that were given to them, known and announced and above board and clearly transparent, that was a good thing. We didn't begrudge them that. But let's be clear, we're not talking about those doses. We're talking about otherwise secret arrangements that are just not right. They need to stop. And there needs to be additional supplies provided to Victoria and other states who have missed out.
Because if he's got to open up, he needs to vaccinate his population as fast as possible too.
I'm wondering what this all could mean for travel between states. I mean, the Premier herself has said that she doesn't expect other states to open up to New South Wales straight away once it opens. But could this roadmap slowly put pressure on Queensland and other states to allow visitors from New South Wales? Because I imagine it's helpful for their tourism bottom line.
I think WA will stay doing its own thing as long as it possibly can. The only thing that will cause it to change its mind is if there's a shortage of workers or they get their own outbreak. And the chances are that the Delta variant will eventually arrive in WA because although they've been very cautious, there are trucks going across the border every day. There are fly-in, fly-out workers. Eventually something will happen and they're behind everybody else on their vaccination targets and then they will probably follow down the same path as us. Same with South Australia. Now, for Queensland and Tasmania, obviously they're very reliant on tourism. So I think there will be some pressure on them to open up, but I would think it will be pretty late in the piece, like closer to Christmas, before they make any moves whatsoever. And they'll want to see what happens in New South Wales. Victoria, however, I think will, you know, if they go down the same path as New South Wales, we might see the border open between those two.
I mean, it's just such a fractured picture when you step back from it. Within New South Wales, you have people who may not be able to travel outside of their LGA. And then from this state, you may only be able to go to one or two other states and not WA for who knows how long.
I think it's more likely that we will be going overseas from New South Wales to Europe before we go to WA. And Gladys is talking about opening the borders at 80% double vaccination rate. And this is part of the Doherty plan. I keep hoping this is so, but I'm not at all confident that it will happen the way they say it's going to happen. And, of course, the great unknown in all of this is what happens if we get a different variant and we get take root overseas, where there suddenly be a, you know, slamming of the borders again to stop other variants coming here.
And I just want to go back to Gladys Berejiklian for a moment and touch on something that we haven't really spoken about, which is last week she decided that she wouldn't be fronting New South Wales press conferences daily anymore. This is a big change in amongst many, many, many other changes. What do you make of this?
Look, I think her motivation is she wants everyone to forget this is a crisis. She wants us all to move out of crisis mode and just get on with it, and not focusing on illness all the time, and just normalise the death and disease that will continue to dog us for months, years to come. So Gladys Berejiklian's vision is that within a year we will treat COVID the same way as we treat the seasonal flu. An illness, it can be serious, it can kill people, but we just live with it. And so more broadly, I think that's what both she and Scott Morrison are hoping that we arrive at, that we travel, we move between the states, we occasionally have to shut down if or quarantine a particular area if there's an outbreak, but basically we all just get on with life and hopefully the hospital system doesn't get overwhelmed.
That was Guardian reporter Anne Davies. You can read more of her reporting on the New South Wales roadmap to freedom at theguardian.com, and we've put some links on the full story page as well. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. This episode was produced by Jane Lee, Beth Atkinson-Quinton, Ellen Lee-Beater and Joe Koning, who also did the sound design. Mixed by Camilla Hannon. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Martignoni, Gabrielle Jackson, and myself, Laura Murphy-Oates. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you tomorrow.